James 2:14-18. What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such faith save them? Suppose a brother or a sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to them, "Go in peace, keep warm and well fed," but does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself, if it's not accomplished by action, is dead. But someone will say, "You have faith, I have deeds. Show me your faith without deeds, and I will show you my faith by deeds." The word of the Lord.
Good morning, everybody. For those who don't know me, my name is Lindsay, and I work with Sojourn Collegiate Ministry at Boston University. I've been lucky enough to spend a few Sundays here with you over the past few years, and I just really love being here with you guys on Sunday mornings. So I was pretty excited when Katie asked me to join Sojourn in this series that we've been doing the last couple weeks. In case you've missed it, let me just go ahead and sum up the past 2 weeks for you. So back in the spring, Katie met with a few of our executive members at Sojourn, and we were just talking about our shared values. So here at Harbor, you use the language of live freely, love deeply, live fully, love deeply, and give freely, which honestly I love. I think that's really great language, and it's just really solid values. But it also aligns really well with Sojourn's values. We just use slightly different language. We say community, faith, and justice. We also say it another way because we have to make it complicated. We say it as the love of God shown among us, in us, and through us. So that's really what the past 2 weeks and today have been about. First, Jeff, our Sojourn's Director of Development, he talked about community, or the love of God shown among us. He talked about the fight against loneliness and the desire that each person has to be known and to feel connection. Last week, our executive director, Chris, talked about faith, or the love of God shown in us. And he talked about the idea of discovering God's dream and how it takes time and sacrifice. He told us the power that stories hold and how important it is to share yours well. So if you haven't guessed already, today we're talking about justice. But the word justice is an oddly complex one to define. So I figured that's exactly where we would start today. So what do people mean even when they say the word justice? And more importantly, how am I using that word today? So when it comes to forms of legal justice, there are four main types. There's retributive justice, or the process of punishing people for wrongdoing. So this is kind of what we see in our court systems, right? Or what you see on Law and Order, SVU, because that's the good one. Right? I mean, I'm not wrong. There's also distributive justice, or the process of determining who gets what. And I kind of think of in Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, or Philosopher's Stone, if you want to get technical. When we first meet Harry's cousin Dudley, it's his birthday, and he is upset about the amount of presents that he has received because it's one less than the year before. In Dudley's head, you know, the distributive justice here is that he should get more presents the older he gets. But for Harry, who has never received a present, he kind of has a different thought about what just and unjust is in that moment. And then there's procedural justice, right? Which is the process of how fairly people are treated. So like when my sisters and I would take turns sitting in the front seat of the car because my older sister Jordan would constantly change the rules about how and when you could call shotgun. So we had to have a new system. And finally, there's restorative justice, which works to repair relationships to rightness. Now, when we hear conversations about like reparations, they're centered around this idea of restorative justice. So I'm going to venture a guess here and say that most people, when they hear the word justice, think about retributive justice, the crime and punishment one. Myself, when I think about Jesus and justice, I tend to think about restorative justice, like the righting of relationships. But in writing this sermon, I actually came across this definition that I really like, that I think fits really well when it comes to talking about God's view of justice. And it's this. It says, to do justice to a person or thing means to reproduce them accurately and show how good they are. I just think that's like really great. I really love that idea. To reproduce accurately and show how good a person is. And if that, to me, if that doesn't sum up how Jesus treats people, like, I'm not really sure what does. And so here at Harbor, when you guys talk about the idea of justice, you use this phrase of giving freely, which I also think is a really beautiful idea. At Sojourn, we talk about it as showing the love of God through us. So with all these definitions that I just threw at you, again, it can be an oddly complex word to work through. The one I'm going to use today to kind of work through this idea is to show the love of God through us. Does that make sense? Great. So what does it take to show the love of God through us? Well, I would actually say that it takes imagination. So did you know that increased imagination leads to increased empathy? There's a study on empathy conducted by McGill and Albany universities that showed that when we imagine someone else's problems in our minds, it makes us feel their pain more and motivates us to help. Sidney Sheldon, one of the co-authors of the study, said it this way. Our experiments revealed that when people simulated distressful scenarios of other individuals, they felt much more personal distress than when these scenarios were not simulated. Interestingly, we also found imagining these scenarios in such a way increased the willingness to help that individual. You can think of it this way. If you see an unhoused person on the street, and the only thing you can think of is this person is lazy, or that they will only spend money on drugs, then that story becomes the only reality. But if you can imagine a different story for that person, like maybe they suddenly lost their job, or their house burned down, or they're struggling with an undiagnosed mental illness, or they're former military and have intense PTSD. If you can imagine other options, your ability to empathize with that person actually increases. So imagination leads to empathy, which then provides more pathways to serve others and show the love of God flowing through us. So then what else can imagination do? Well, anything, right? I mean, it can turn a few blankets and chairs into like the world's greatest castle. It can take a couple sticks and make them epic swords wielded by like the best warriors you've ever seen, or take a hairbrush and turn it into a mic. I mean, every time I put this mic on, I'm like casually living out my childhood dreams of being a Spice Girl, you know? Imagination can do a lot. It can make new worlds and it can make new friends. Another one of Sojourn's values is fun is spiritual. It's this idea that having fun, experiencing joy, is a spiritual act of worship. And what does fun do? Well, it leads to community. The more fun you have with people, the more you want to be around them. The more you laugh together, the more you want to share with them. The more included you feel, the more inclusive you become. And so what else does imagination do? I think it makes the world a more just and loving place. When we look to the future and dream about what we want things to look like, we're using our imagination. When we hope for change and work towards restoration, we're using our imagination. We're imagining so that we can believe in what could be. Imagination propels us to love, which then propels us to action. In his sermon at the marriage of Prince Harry and Meghan Markle, Bishop Michael Bruce Curry said this. He said, Imagine a world where love is the way. When love is the way, then no child will go to bed hungry in this world ever again. When love is the way, poverty will become history, and the earth will be a sanctuary. When love is the way, we will lay down our swords and shields down by the riverside to study war no more. When love is the way, there's plenty good room for all of God's children. Because when love is the way, we treat each other like we're actually family. When love is the way, we know that God is the source of us all, and we are brothers and sisters, children of God. I actually have a print on my wall that says, "Imagine a world where love is the way," and I use it as a reminder of what could be. We so often hear, if we're taking care of everyone else, who is taking care of you? But I tell my students all the time that I have this image of the world where nobody has to worry about their own needs because their community is taking care of it. I imagine a world where I don't have to worry about my own needs because my friend Michelle's taking care of me, and Emily is taking care of Michelle, and Jenny's taking care of Emily, and Christina's taking care of Jenny. I'm taking care of Christina. Or even better, we're all taking care of each other, so the load doesn't even have to fall on one person's shoulders alone. I can give all of myself to my community because my community is giving all of themselves to me. This is the world I imagine where love is the way. And I do honestly believe that that world is possible. Empathy, community, action, imagination propels all of them. Imagination is how we show the love of God through us. Now, imagination is great and all, but if we don't get to that last step of action, then I do think we have missed the boat a bit. So let's take a look back at that passage that was read to us today. The book of James is actually one of my favorite books in the Bible, and it's because of passages like this. I mean, I do honestly think that James could have grown up in New England, like, with how blunt that he is. He is not afraid to tell you exactly what he thinks, and I love it. So James 2, it says, "What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such faith save them? Suppose a brother or sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to them, 'Go in peace, keep warm and well-fed,' but does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself, if it is not accompanied by action, is dead. But someone will say, 'You have faith, I have deeds. Show me your faith without deeds, and I will show you my faith by my deeds.'" So what's James telling us here? Well, he's saying that justice, the love of God shown through us, it's a verb. It's an action word. Faith by itself, if not accompanied by action, is dead. I will show you my faith by my deeds. Faith and love demand action. Otherwise, what's the point? Now, stay with me for a second. This is going to feel like I'm going on a random tangent, because I kind of am. But during COVID, my younger sister got me hooked on Survivor. And now I'm like super obsessed. So if you don't watch, or if you haven't watched in a while, the idea is pretty simple. You isolate a group of people from everything they know. You make them castaways on their own island and let them create their own rules for their new society. And then they get voted off one by one until there's one sole survivor left. It's actually this really great show that explores human dynamics, social strategy, and really who people become when everything is stripped away. Now, post-COVID, they've made the contestants' time on the island a bit shorter. It's now only 26 days instead of the original 39. But they've also made it arguably tougher. Now, the contestants have to win a challenge in order to receive any flint, which is needed to start fires. And the only food they're given is just like a small jar of rice that they have to figure out how to portion out among themselves. In the most recent season, there was one tribe that didn't have fire for the first 11 days. So they couldn't get warm, they couldn't cook any food. Like, it was pretty brutal. But speaking of the previous season, there was one contestant that was super memorable. If you watch, you'll know who I'm talking about. His name was Jelinski, and he was pretty convinced that he was gonna take it all. He stepped up to take part in that first challenge to try and win supplies for his tribe. He was there to be a leader. And like he said over and over on that first day, Jelinski doesn't quit. But here's the thing. All he did was quit. During that first challenge to get the supplies, he and a partner, they had to fill up these like giant like rain barrels full of water, but they were only using these small buckets with holes in them. With more than half the time left, Jelinski quit. On the next challenge, he had to bluff to win an extra vote, and he folded 90 seconds in and lost his vote instead and actually gave the other tribes extra votes instead. As his tribe mate said, "Now I know that when the going gets tough, Jelinski will tuck and run." So while he says he's here for the long haul, that he doesn't quit, Jelinski's actions tell a different story. As James says, "I will show you my faith by my deeds." So when it comes to letting love be the way, it doesn't just require action. It requires the action that's others focused. At Sojourn, we call this moving from a me faith to a we faith. It's this understanding that the good news of Jesus is not just good news for me or for you, but it's good news for everyone. And for everyone to experience that good news, we have to turn our focus outward. When you look at every interaction that Jesus had, he always centered the people around him and put their stories and their needs first. The parables he told, like the Good Samaritan, they command us to turn our focus to those around us and away from ourselves. And once again, James puts it perfectly. "Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. Anyone who listens to the word but does not do what it says is like someone who looks at his face in a mirror and, after looking at himself, goes away and immediately forgets what he looks like. But whoever looks intently into the perfect law that gives freedom and continues in it, not forgetting what they have heard, but doing it, they will be blessed in what they do." So it can be easy to look at all this and say, like, "Yeah, that's great, I agree, but how can I live it out if I'm still even trying to figure out what it even is?" And I hear that. I do. But I've also worked in vocational ministry for 13 years. And one thing I've noticed is that if students don't understand this concept of me to we, this faith that Jesus calls us to, very early on in their faith journey, it only becomes more difficult for them to understand the farther along they are in that journey. And I'm actually not the only one to have noticed this. Father Richard Rohr is a Franciscan friar who was ordained into the priesthood in 1970. So he's been doing this work for a while. He actually started the Center for Action and Contemplation in New Mexico, which is designed to deepen prayer practice and strengthen compassionate engagement with the world. He has this daily email devotional that I would highly recommend to anyone. And it was in one of those recent emails that he said, "After teaching the gospel for over 50 years, trying to build communities and attempting to raise up elders and leaders, I'm convinced that one of my major failures was that I didn't ask more of people from the very beginning. If they didn't turn outward early, they tended to never do so." When we fail to move from a me faith to a we faith, we become exclusive instead of inclusive. The dominant focus becomes bringing people into the spaces that we feel comfortable in instead of going out to where people are. When the sole focus of faith is the self, then that faith can become reduced to like more of a self-help code of conduct instead of this revolutionary, world-changing way of life that Jesus calls us to. Now, don't get me wrong, you should have a personal relationship with Jesus. That's a good thing. And it's good to be constantly re-examining your own beliefs and where you stand and everything. But if that relationship with Jesus and if those beliefs don't move you to go out and change the way you're living, to love your literal neighbor in a practical way, to imagine a better, more just, more empathetic, and generous world, then that faith is actually not the faith that God calls us to. Engaging in empathy, serving others, building community, and loving people is not an option when it comes to Jesus. In fact, when Jesus was asked what the greatest commandment was, he said it was to love God, love others, and to love yourself. He said that all of the law and all of the prophets and all of everything rests on the shoulders of these commands. Love God, love others, love yourself. It's not something that we eventually get to once everything else gets worked out, or when we have the free time, or that certain people get called to and others don't. It's something that we're all called to do now, and to trust that in the doing, the understanding and the believing part comes along with it. So going back to our good friend James, he also has this to say about faith in action. Was not our father Abraham considered righteous for what he did when he offered his son Isaac on the altar? You see that his faith and his actions were working together, and his faith was made complete by what he did. So for those who don't know the story of Abraham, he's considered one of the fathers of the faith. When he was 100 years old and his wife Sarah was 90 years old, she gave birth to their son Isaac, fulfilling a promise that God had made about Abraham's legacy. When Isaac was about 16, God then asked Abraham to sacrifice Isaac on the altar as a show of faith and trust. So Abraham took Isaac up a mountain, laid him on the altar, and was about to make that sacrifice until God stopped his hand and provided a goat instead. Now, there's obviously a lot happening in the story, and we don't have time to unpack that today, but this is what James is talking about when he mentions Abraham and says that his faith and his actions were working together, and his faith was made complete by what he did. According to James, there's something about action, about putting our words and beliefs into practice, that changes us. There's some weird alchemy going on that changes our faith and the way that we see God. It moves things from a head knowledge to a heart knowledge, from theory to reality, and from an idea into a story that needs to be shared. When we give ourselves to others, we actually receive something in return. We're not just showing others the love of God through our actions, but we're also experiencing the love of God through our actions as well. So what is justice? Justice is reproducing and representing people accurately and showing them how good they are. Justice is faith paired with action. Justice is using our imagination to create a more loving and inclusive world. Justice is the love of God moving through us. Will you pray with me? Lord, may we be a community that is for all people. May we understand that this good news that you have shown us is not just good news for us, but it's good news for everyone. Help us to expand our imagining of what could be, of what is possible. You do your best work in what seems impossible. That's where we see you perform miracles. So help our imaginations leave room for the miraculous. In that imagining, show us what it can be for love to be the way. And may we always remember to point that love outwards. May we experience your love moving through us. And may we also show your love to those around us. Amen.